Thank you and welcome everyone to the first bidder information webcast for the 2019 BGS auctions. I'm Chantal Lacasse from NERA on behalf of the Electric Distribution Companies of New Jersey, Public Service Electric and Gas, Jersey Central Power and Light, Atlantic City Electric, and Rockland Electric. And I will be presenting their joint proposal to procure supply for BGS customers, basic generation service customers, those customers in New Jersey that do not choose a third-party supplier for their electric service. I also have representatives from the EDCs with me today to help answer your questions. To ask a question, we'll take those questions in writing. You can use the WebEx interface, locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen, select all panelists in the Ask box, type in your question, and if you can, if it is specific to a particular slide, it would help us if you included the relevant slide number, and then you can click Send to submit your question. Before we start, a second piece of housekeeping is a disclaimer here that throughout the presentation, I'll be making statements that describe and refer to documents and agreements, and those are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by my reference to the governing documents, which are all the documents included in the EDC's July filing. That filing is posted to the BGS proceeding page of the auction tab on the BGS auction website, bgs-auction.com. Today, the presentation will cover first a quick introduction to the roles of the EDCs, the auction manager, as well as the staff and their consultant in the auction process, and then we'll proceed to an overview of the EDC's proposal as provided in the July filing to the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. We'll then give more detail on that proposal in talking about the products, by which I mean what is being procured through the BGS auction process and the supplier's role in providing that service. We'll talk about the auction process, which is both the schedule and how that supply is procured. We'll talk about bidding in the auction, given the descending clock auction format that's being proposed in this July filing. We'll also talk about the application process, which is almost entirely online, and we'll summarize the requirements under that application process. And finally, we'll talk about other sources of information for potential bidders in the BGS auction, including the BGS auction website. We'll make some notes about the data that's being provided on the website, as well as other sources of information, such as the PJM website. So the EDCs, we're talking about the EDC's proposal, the Electric Distribution Company's proposal, and they're responsible for the major policy decisions that are incorporated in that proposal and for making that proposal to the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. So when I talk about the board in this presentation, I am referring to the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. The auction manager administers the auction and is in consultation with the board staff and their consultant that are consulted on major decisions throughout the auction process. The consultant for staff, the board advisor, is also responsible for monitoring the auction process and for advising the board. At the conclusion of the auction, if the board approves the results of the auction, then those auction results are binding on the bidders and the EDCs. We then proceed to executions of the contract based on those auction results. The board approval process in considering the auction results is limited to 2 business days. That is what is being proposed in the July filing. Provide more of an overview in talking about the main building blocks and the slides that follow of the July filing. The BTS auction and the types of auction process that is being proposed here, the statewide auction process that's been in use since 2002. And there's 2 essential goals of that auction process. First is to procure supply for BGS customers at a cost that's consistent with market conditions. And second is to enable the participation of a broad spectrum of entities, including energy trading and marketing companies, by aggregating a portfolio of wholesale products and providing price risk management services. The building blocks of the auction process have been stable over the years. There's a single statewide process that seeks offers for all BGS load that's not already procured. The products are full requirements. That means that participants bid to provide all components of supply to serve BGS customers, namely energy, transmission, capacity, ancillary services, and any other services that may be required by PJM. BGS suppliers are also responsible for compliance with the renewable portfolio standards, and we'll talk a little bit later on in the presentation about how there have been changes to the requirements under the renewable portfolio standards. The auction format that's proposed is a descending clock auction that's a multiple round and multiple product auction format where the prices tick down from one round to the next as long as there are more bids than supply needed. Of note is that the load from all 4 EDCs are bid out in a single auction, and that means that suppliers have the ability to switch their bids from one EDC to another in response to the prices in the auction. Another building block of the auction process is the contingency plan, which is that any supply that's not procured at the auction will be purchased through PJM-administered markets. So there's no second bite at the apple under this plan. So we said that there was one process. There's one process that includes 2 separate auctions. That are separated on the basis of which customers they procure supply for. First, there's the BGS CIEP auction. So CIEP is for commercial and industrial energy pricing. And that auction is to procure supply for larger customers that are on an hourly price plan. The auction itself determines a CIEP price, quote unquote, which is a price in dollars per megawatt day that is paid to suppliers on the basis of the capacity obligations of customers. Suppliers are also paid for energy at the real-time hourly spot price. And I'm using that as a short term for the PJM residual metered load aggregate real-time locational marginal price. Suppliers are also paid predetermined rates for other components of supply, such as ancillary services and transmission, and we'll give more detail on that when we take a deeper look into the BGS CIEP auction a little bit later on in the presentation. So those components that I've just talked about, the CIEP price and energy and the other predetermined rates for components of supply, are paid by are also paid by BGS CIEP customers, so on the basis of the obligations of BGS CIEP customers, that is, the customers that actually take BGS CIEP service. Suppliers are also paid a CIEP standby fee, and that CIP standby fee is levied on all CIP customers. So we're making a distinction here. All CIP customers mean BGS CIP customers, of course, but also the customers that take service from a TPS, but were they to come back to BGS, would do so on a CIP tariff or rate. So that's the first auction for those larger commercial and industrial customers, and those commercial and industrial customers are those in specific rate classes and also those with a peak load contribution greater than 500 kW. The second auction is for those smaller customers, the BGS RSCP auction. So RSCP is for residential small commercial pricing, and those customers are on a stable all-in price. The auction determines that all-in price for all services and components of the full requirement service, and suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour of load served. Each of these auctions has a given term, a given supply period, and also four products. For the BGS CIP auction, when I talk about a product, I mean the BGS CIP load for each EDC. So there are four products in the sense that each of these, the supply for each EDC is procured separately, but all together in that one BGS CIP auction. The supply period for the BGS CIP product is 1 year, so from June 1, 2019 to May 31st, 2020. For the BGS RSCP auction, similarly, there are four products where each product is the BGS RSCP load for an EDC. The supply period here is 3 years, so there's a rolling procurement structure for the BGS RSCP auction, where supply for one-third of the load is procured every year for a three-year supply period. For this auction coming up, the supply period starts June 1, 2019, and goes to May 31st, 2022. The rates that customers pay are based on the prices that are determined by the auction. So for the BGS RSCP customers, so those are the residential and smaller commercial customers, then the auction prices will be determined by an average cost for each EDC. So there's an average cost because at any given point in time, those customers are served by the supply that's procured in three different auctions, given the rolling procurement structure. So that average cost is seasonally adjusted and tranche-weighted for the three auctions that are supplying the customers. Ratios are applied to this average cost to develop rates for each of the rate classes. All classes have seasonal rates, and some classes also have time-of-day rates. The EDCs make available full details on their rate design methodology. That's part of the July filing in each EDC's company-specific addendum. The EDCs also make available spreadsheets that detail the rate design, and the auction manager makes available to potential bidder a rate spreadsheet tool by which bidders can input their own assumptions on auction prices and see the rates that would result. On the BGS CIEP side, the auction determines a CIEP price, as we saw in an earlier slide, and customers pay that CIEP price for their capacity obligation. Customers will also pay the real-time hourly spot price for energy, a predetermined rate for ancillary services, and also a transmission rate that's predetermined, meaning it's set before the auction and is EDC-specific. Furthermore, customers, so again, not just BGS CIP customers, but also customers who are served by a TPS, but who, were they returned to BGS, would do so on a CIP tariff or rate, all of those CIP customers pay an option fee for the benefit of being able to come back to BGS CIP service and that's called the CIP standby fee. So those are the building blocks at a high level. In this next section, we'll talk a little bit more about the BGS CIP products as well as the BGS RSCP products. And then we'll go on to including additional details by talking about the supplier master agreement, which is the contract that's proposed by the EDCs between the EDCs and each BGS supplier. The BGS CIEP load and the BGS RSCP load are each divided into a number of tranches. So thinking about the BGS CIEP load first, in the middle of this diagram at the top of the slide, that includes the load of all those larger commercial and industrial customers, all of which are interval metered. And that will be divided into a number of tranches, each representing a fixed percentage of the BGS CIEP load for a particular EDC. At the aggregate level, the total BGS load is the retail load in each EDC's territory, less the load served by TPSs. The BGS RSCP load for each EDC similarly will be divided into a number of tranches. That number will be different for each EDC, and we'll provide those numbers in the following slides, but each tranche for an EDC will represent a fixed percentage of that BGS RSCP load. And that means that if a BGS RSCP supplier is serving one tranche, it is providing all services for that percentage of the BGS RSCP load at any given point in time, no matter what it would be. The BGS RSCP load is calculated as a residual, that is, it's the total BGS load minus the metered EDC BGS CIEP load. Of note that BGS customers are free to come and go from BGS with appropriate notice to the EDCs, and BGS suppliers are responsible for evaluating that migration risk from BGS customers. And for BGS RSCP customers, the development of the rates before the auction and the availability to bidders of that full rate methodology, as well as the rate spreadsheet tool, is a benefit in terms of being able to evaluate that risk for migration. BGS suppliers provide the full requirement service, as we've been talking about, and are a load-serving entity for a percentage of an EDC's load, corresponding to the number of tranches that they have won. So the role that they play in this respect is similar to that of a third-party supplier. So as we mentioned, a tranche is a fixed percentage of load for both BGS CIP and both BGS RSCP. So the way that the number of tranches are set for the BGS CIP auction is that a tranche represents approximately 75 megawatts on an eligible basis. So eligible, I mean all CIP customers, those that actually take the service, who are BGS CIP customers, as well as customers that are served by third-party suppliers or TPSs, and that if they were to take BGS, would come back on a CIP tariff or rate. So that's what I mean by eligible. I mean all CIP customers. So the number of tranches is selected so that the megawatt measure in this table is approximately 75 megawatts. And the tranche size, then, the percentage corresponds to 100% divided by the number of tranches. So for ACE, for example, there are four tranches, and that's how we get as close as possible to 75 megawatts on an eligible basis. And that means that each tranche, so a BGS CIP supplier that holds one tranche, will be serving 25% of the load of BGS CIP customers at any given point in time. So the CIEP load, again, on an eligible basis, if you sum the CIEP peak load shares for all the EDCs on a statewide basis, would be approximately 3,000 megawatts. All these figures, the megawatts that I'm providing as the CIEP peak load shares, the megawatt measures in this table, as well as the number of tranches, given the number of tranches is determined to have that are on an eligible basis approximately 75 megawatts. All that is provisional and subject to revision. Those figures will be updated in early November with the PJM update of those figures and would be included in the final auction rules and will be also announced to bidders on the BGS auction website. So I was careful to point out that the figures I was providing was on an eligible basis, meaning customers on the service and customers with TPS that could return to the service, because the migration for CIEP customers is substantial. As you see here, on an account basis, that switching varies between 70 and 85%, roughly speaking, while on a load basis, on average statewide, it's about 85%, meaning that there are 15% of the load that remains on BGS CIEP and 85% that is shopping. So BGS CIEP suppliers will be providing for the full requirement service with energy priced at the real-time market. We talked about the payments already, that it's paid the CIEP price that's determined at the auction for the BGS CIEP's customer's capacity obligation, the CIEP standby fee levied on all CIEP customers at the retail meter, the real-time hourly spot price for energy for the EDC zone, as well as predetermined specific rates for ancillary services proposed to be $6 per megawatt hour, and for transmissions, where those rates are announced approximately 10 days before the auction. So that's a little bit later than has been the case in the past. Most of these announcements this year are going to be roughly at the time of the last bidder information webcast that is targeted to bidders that have registered to participate at the auction, or at the time of the trial auctions, which is the training for bidders prior to the start of the auction. So BGS CIEP suppliers get a stable revenue on the entire CIEP customer base through the CIEP standby fee and are able to arbitrage day-ahead versus real-time markets. BGS CIEP suppliers, of course, face the risk of migration, which, given there's 15% of customers on average on the service, is really or potentially a risk of return of customers to BGS CIEP. And given that there's a fixed price for ancillary services, BGS CIEP suppliers also have to manage the risk that actual costs will be different from that predetermined rate. So that's on the BGS CIEP side. I'll have a little bit of the same discussion on the BGS RSCP side. That was the case for CIEP. A tranche is a fixed percentage of BGS RSCP load for an EDC. For CIEP, it represented approximately 75 megawatts. Here it's about 100 megawatts, a little less potentially on an eligible basis. It was 100 megawatts when the number of tranches were first fixed. Similarly, the tranche size here is a fixed percentage. The number of tranches that you see here under tranche target are for the number of tranches for this upcoming 2019 BGS RSCP auction. Of course, there are tranches that have been procured in last year and the year before's auction. So for RICO, for example, there are actually four tranches in total for RICO, and there's one tranche that's being procured this year. So the tranche size is 25%, so 100% divided by 4, and the megawatt measure in this case is exactly 100 megawatts. As was the case for the BGS-CIEP figures that I was quoting, these also will be updated, not the number of tranches. Number of tranches is fixed, but the megawatt measure corresponding to the tranche as well as the RSCP peak load share will also be updated in the November timeframe and provided to bidders in announcement as well as in the final auction rules. If you take the BGS, the RSCP peak load share for all the EDCs together, you get about 4,800 megawatts, and remember, this is on an eligible basis, so counting both customers on the service and those on TPSs, but that could return to BGS RSCP service. The migration is less on the BGS RSCP side. It's still substantial and pretty much in the same general figures as the CIEP migration. If you look at the larger RSCP customers, so remember that CIEP customers are those in specific rate classes and also those customers above 500 kW. So if you look at the upper tier of the RSCP customers between 400 and 499 kW, then migration is similar to the CIEP side with a figure of roughly 85% of migration on a load basis. Residential migration is lower, approximately 15% on a statewide basis. There are various switching data statistics that are posted to the BGS data room and that are updated monthly and that you can look at. In terms of the supplier's role and responsibility, the BGS RSCP supplier also procures full requirement service at an all-in price, and in so doing, aggregates a supply portfolio from various wholesale sources that can be generation owners and PJM, wholesale marketers, financial over-the-counter power and gas markets, PJM markets, whether it's the supplier assesses and prices the load variability, market price variability, and the risks of switching and provides price risk management services. As was the case for BGS CIEP suppliers, there is a migration risk or a risk that customers will return to BGS service, given that they are free to come and go with appropriate notice to the EDCs. There are also load and weather risks, fuel price risks, as well as risk associated with the fact that the RSCP class can change over the longer term. So I was the figures of 500 kW as the line between RSCP and CIEP. That is a line that the board may reconsider from time to time and that the board has changed from time to time. It's been stable for the last several years, but it is still possible that it could change during the term of a BGS RSCP supplier master agreement. There are also risk associated with the change to the rate design. The EDCs, as part of their July filing, are proposing a rate design, but are proposing that rate design for this year, and the EDCs may make other proposals in future years, or the board may make a decision to change that rate design for this year or for a future year. That's a bit more detailed overview of the product, of what is being procured, and all of the details and the full description of the product and the full description of the obligations of BGS suppliers are provided in the standard contract, which is the supplier master agreement, and there's a supplier master agreement on the BGS RSCP side and on the BGS CIEP side. Those would be the contracts that are proposed by the EDCs to be the terms between the BGS supplier and each EDC acting as agent for its retail customers. Once approved by the board, those standard contracts are final, and are non-negotiable. To be qualified to participate in the BGS auction, an applicant has to agree to the terms of the BGS supplier agreement during the application process. There are opportunities for potential bidders to comment on the BGS supplier agreement, and those opportunities are during the regulatory proceeding. The regulatory proceeding opens with the board order asking for BGS proposal in the May timeframe, and there have been already comments submitted, initial comments that were due September 5th. There was a hearing for oral comments on September 28th, and there's a final opportunity to comment on October 12th. The final comments are meant to be responses and replies to comments and issues that have already been raised, either in initial comments or in the legislative hearing. So we won't go through all the details of those obligations. We've talked about the highlights of the product and what the obligation and role of the supplier are, and we'll be giving in the next few slides just a few highlights of specific provisions. So the first is that BGS suppliers are responsible for fulfilling whatever renewable portfolio standards are in effect during the supply period. That includes compliance with Class 1 and Class 2 requirements on solar. Those have to be demonstrated using renewable energy credits as issued by PJM EIS GATS. And to do so, suppliers must register into GATS and obtain a specific account to be able to transfer their RECs during the supply period, their renewable energy credits and solar renewable energy credits, RECs and SRECs, from their account to the EDC's account. At some point in prior auctions, the EDCs were able to provide RECs to BGS suppliers, and that's no longer the case. That's one thing to note. The second thing to note is that there have been changes to the renewable portfolio standard through the passing of the Renewable Energy Bill 3723 that implies that there are increases in solar obligations for BGS suppliers, as well as increases in Class 1 obligations starting January 1, 2020. I'll also highlight the credit provisions for the BGS CIP and RSCP Supplier Master Agreement. For the BGS CIP agreement, financial guarantees of $70,000 per tranche are required. For BGS RSCP, there are two separate credit requirements. One is also a fixed amount per tranche, so the independent credit requirement is $2.4 million per tranche. That $2.4 million is the figure at the beginning of the supply period. That figure does decline over the three-year term of the contract, so that's one requirement. The second requirement is a mark-to-market requirement that will move with energy prices. And corresponding to these, there are unsecured credit lines that can be provided to a supplier or to its guarantor that's set on a sliding scale depending on the credit rating of the entity, as well as the entity's tangible net worth, or TNW. There are two separate credit lines that depend on all BGS obligation of a particular supplier. There's one credit limit that's set together for the BGS RSCP mark-to-market exposure and the CIEP credit exposure together. And then there's a separate credit line that can be established for the BGS RSCP independent credit requirement. So in other words, for BGS RSCP, there were two separate credit requirements, but there are also the possibility of obtaining two separate unsecured credit lines corresponding to those requirements. And the CIEP requirement is bundled together with the mark-to-market. Security generally can be put in the form of a guarantee, assuming a credit-worthy guarantor that can obtain unsecured certain line of credit under the standards that are in Article 6 of the BGS Supplier Master Agreement, or through a letter of credit, or through cash. There's also Section 15.9 of the Supplier Master Agreement, which deals with the recovery and payment for adjustment that results from changes in transmission-related charges that can occur during the term of the BGS contract. So there's a similar provision in both the BGS RSCP and the BGS CIEP Supplier Master Agreement. That's not kind of automatic. It requires the EDCs to file with the board and ask to be able to collect any increase in the transmission rates from customers, and if they're allowed to do so, then it is for the benefit of BGS suppliers, where payment is generally made when there is FERC order that's not subject to refund. There is information on the website on the filings made by the EDCs and the orders by the board in this respect, and they're on the transmission page of the auction tab of the BGS auction website. And there's also additional information that will become available shortly, including FAQs on this topic and also data provided by the EDCs related to the rates paid to BGS supplier for transmission-related charges. And to the extent that there are, and I believe there are questions on specific payments to BGS suppliers under Section 15.9 for specific transmission filings of the EDCs, we may have time to deal with these at the end of the presentation. And if not, we will be responding to these in writing and making that part of the FAQs that are mentioned on this slide. I'll next talk about the auction process, by which here I mean a little bit the calendar of events and what's going to be occurring in particular from now until the board order on the EDC's proposal on the July filing. So the board order is the final word on the process, and all the approved rules, agreements, process and terms will be decided by that order from the board, and its decision on all aspects of the EDC's proposal. So be aware that what we discussed today and how we presented specific auction rules, calendars, timing, the BGS supplier agreement, any process and terms as approved by the board may be different from what we presented here, and the bidder will be entirely responsible for reading final documents, and those final documents will be provided on the BGS auction website. And starting from the expected board decision, this is a kind of a high-level overview of what happens after the board decision, and then I'm going to go a little bit backwards and think about and present some of the events from now until the board decision. So, but if we start from the board decision, which is expected to occur in November this year, and in November, the auction manager will also be announcing certain parameters for the auction, in particular the tranche sizes and load caps. So we talked about how the tranche sizes will be subject to change and the megawatt measures will be subject to change after the PJM makes its update to the peak load shares in the November timeframe. So that will be announced along with the minimum and maximum starting prices. So the minimum and maximum starting prices are a range of prices where the auction may begin. So I mentioned that the auction is a multiple round process and will start at a given price level, and then prices will decrease until the auction closes after bidders compete through multiple rounds. So that range of where the auction can start is between the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price, and those will be announced on November 14th. After that announcement and the board decision, the application portal will open, and the Part 1 application, the first phase of the application process, will be due December 18th by noon. And through that Part 1 application, interested parties become qualified bidders for the auction. And those qualified bidders are then invited to submit the Part 2 application, for which the deadline is January 10th, 2019. And a qualified bidder that successfully completes the Part 2 application becomes a registered bidder. Registered bidders will be invited to a further information webcast. There's also going to be an information webcast for bidders after the board decision to communicate the details of that decision and details of the final agreements and final rules. There's going to be a final and last bidder information webcast once bidders are registered to talk about the last announcements of parameters, including transmission rates and release of the final rate spreadsheet by the EDCs, and provide some training for submitting bids in the auction, which will be through a specialized auction software. A few days before the auctions begin, which are due to begin February 1st for the CIEP auction and February 4th for the RSCP auction, 3 days before those dates, then the auction manager informs bidders that are registered in the auction of the starting prices, so the actual round one prices. So November 14th is the range of what those round one prices can be, and those actual round one prices are communicated to bidders a few days before the auction. So that's what's going to happen once the board has issued its decision and order on the BGS proposals. Before that happens, however, bidders do have a couple of credit-related processes in which they may want to participate. The first is an opportunity to comment on the letters of credit. So there are two letters of credit. There's a pre-auction letter of credit and there's a post-auction letter of credit. Those will be posted shortly to the credit contract and credit page on the bidder info tab of the BGS auction website. The pre-auction letter of credit is used in the Part 2 application to submit financial guarantees in an amount that's proportional to the bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And we haven't defined those terms yet. We haven't talked about the Part 2 application, but roughly speaking, the maximum starting price is one of those parameters announced on November 14th, and the bidder will be required to state how many tranches it is willing to bid at that maximum starting price. And that will form the basis for the amount of the financial guarantee that will have to provide at the Part 2 application stage, and the manner in which it will provide that financial guarantee is through, in part, through a pre-auction letter of credit. So every bidder will be required to submit a pre-auction letter of credit. There is no cash option in submitting those financial guarantees or this bid assurance collateral. So that's one type of letter of credit. The first type is the pre-auction letter of credit. There's a BGS CIP and there's a BGS RSCP pre-auction letter of credit. The second type is the post-auction letter of credit, so-called, and we refer to that as the letter of credit that's appended to the supplier master agreement and that suppliers can use to provide financial guarantees and security during the term of the supplier master agreement. So bidders have an opportunity to comment on both types of letters of credit, pre-auction and post-auction, and previously accepted modifications, to the extent that they do remain acceptable to the EDCs, will be posted to the BGS auction website. So what that means is that the first step here for bidders who are interested in commenting is to look at those previously accepted modification, and to the extent that you wanted to propose a modification, it's already there. It means it's already acceptable. It's acceptable to every potential bidder on an optional basis, so you do not need to resubmit it at that point. So the process here to submit or to propose modification is to submit the letter of credit as a red line, so a red line in Microsoft Word, and to submit that letter of credit to the BGS auction manager. So in consultation with your bank or financial institution to see whether the bank or financial institution may need or wish to have certain modification made to the standard form of those letters of credit. You can provide a red line to show what those modifications would be. And those modifications are then considered by the EDCs. And the EDCs will do one of three things. The EDC could revise the standard form if the change that you're proposing is beneficial to everyone and is an improvement on the language that's already there, or the EDCs may approve the use of your modification on an optional basis. Again, if a particular bidder submits a modification and it's approved on an optional basis, then it becomes part of the list of acceptable modification for that letter of credit, and it becomes available to all bidders on an optional basis. Or the EDC can reject the proposed modification. So the deadline to provide comments is noon on October 23rd. The EDCs will consider all comments and proposed modifications. Potential bidders will receive an individualized response to their modification, and then a few days later on November 5th, we will be posting all modifications that are acceptable on an optional basis in one document and putting it on that same contract and credit page of the bidder info tab of the BGS auction website. There's also an alternate guarantee process that's for bidders that may have corporate policies that prevent them from using the standard form of guarantee that's appended to each supplier master agreement. And there's a specified list of minimum requirements that an alternate form of guarantee must satisfy, and you should look at that first. It's also posted on that contract and credit page of the bidder info tab in the BGS auction website. And in particular, the alternate form of guarantee must be for unlimited liability. And that's in contrast or opposed to the standard form of guarantee that has a liability limit. If you are planning to participate, if you want, you're interested in this process, the first step is to provide an expression of interest to the auction manager, and the deadline for that is October 23rd, 2018. For those parties that do express interest, then additional deadlines and requirements will be made available to them at that time. So that's the auction process. There is a calendar on the BGS auction website that provides more detail on all of the events and the announcements that are planned under the calendar that has been filed by DEC as part of their July filing. In this next section, I'll talk a little bit more about the auction format. So we've already mentioned that what is proposed is that the auction format be a descending clock auction. And the descending clock auction is a design that's both multiple product and multiple round. So it's multi-product in the sense that the tranches for all EDCs are procured at once. And here, again, I'm distinguishing there's two different auctions. So the tranches, the BGS RSCP tranches for all EDCs are procured at once in the BGS RSCP auction. And separately but concurrently, the tranches, all the BGS CIEP tranches for all EDCs are procured at once in the BGS CIEP auction. So those things are completely separate. There's no switching between RSCP and CIEP. It's a multiple round design in the sense that bidding proceeds in rounds. The auction manager will announce the round one prices, so the prices for round one. At those prices, suppliers state how many tranches they want to supply. And for an EDC, to the extent that there are more tranches that are bid than there are tranches that are needed or available, then the price for that EDC will tick down in the next round. So in that way, prices are going to tick down from one round to the next as prices decline until we reach a point where the number of tranches bid is equal to the number of tranches that are needed, or equivalently, that there's no excess supply. From one round to the next, suppliers can switch their bids from one EDC to another, always, as I mentioned before, in a given auction, not across auctions. So we'll be talking about bids and prices in the slides that follow. So just a reminder that the price means two different things in the two different auctions. So for BGS RSCP, the price is a cent per kilowatt hour all-in price, while for BGS CIEP, the CIEP price is a dollar per megawatt day paid on the basis of the BGS CIEP customer's capacity obligation. So to make things a little bit more concrete, I can present an example. This is an RSCP example. The prices are in cents per kilowatt hour, so this is BGS RSCP. So you have in this table for each of the EDCs the price in round one. So in this example, the price is 15 cents per kilowatt hour for all EDCs in round one. So it doesn't need to be that way, by which I mean the price in round one does not need to be the same for all of the EDCs. It could be different. And there are a number of tranches that are needed for each of the EDCs. So that's in the column number to buy. So 28 tranches for PSE&G, 18 for Jersey Central Power and Light, 7 for Atlantic City Electric, and 1 for Rockland Electric. So those are the prices that are announced to suppliers. Those are the tranches that are needed for each of the EDCs, and then the suppliers state how many tranches they're willing to supply at those prices. At the end of the bidding phase, then those numbers are tabulated and summed, and in this example, there are 78 tranches that are bid for PSE&G, 35 for JCP&L, 9 for ACE, and 1 for RICO. So it means that there is excess supply, so there's more tranches bid than tranches that are needed for the first three EDCs, PSE&G, JCP&L, and ACE. Because there's excess supply for those EDCs, the price for those EDCs will decline in round two. However, for RICO in this example, there's one tranche that's needed and one tranche that is bid. Therefore, there's no excess supply, and the price will not decline in round two. It doesn't mean the auction is over for RICO because bidders have the ability to switch their bids from one EDC to the next. So it is possible that bidders will want, at some future round, to switch their bids from one of the other three EDCs and bid on RICO instead. And because of that possibility, then bidding on RICO remains open. For the EDCs for which the price is declining, the price will decline as a function of the amount of excess supply on that EDC. Roughly speaking, the greater the excess supply, the greater is the reduction in price. More precisely, the decrement or the decline in price is calculated on the basis of the oversupply ratio, which is the column on the right in this example. The oversupply ratio is the excess supply on a particular EDC as a proportion of the maximum possible excess supply on that EDC. So, for example, for PSE&G, the excess supply is 50 tranches. The excess supply in the entire auction is 69 tranches, 50 plus 17 plus 2. And the oversupply ratio is the 50 tranches of excess supply divided by the maximum possible excess supply. Well, that's 69 tranches, but we round that up to 70 because that's the bound for the excess supply range that's reported to bidders. So 50 divided by 70 is 0.714. So that's how that oversupply ratio is calculated. Similarly for ACE, it's similar, but it is a bit different. The excess supply here is 2, but the maximum excess supply that can be on ACE is not the 69 tranches, and that's because bidders in the BGS RSCP auction are limited to bidding 3 tranches for ACE. This example, it's not written anywhere, but this example is calculated assuming that there are 21 bidders in the auction. So the maximum number of tranches that could be bid on ACE is 21 bidders, each bidding the low cap for ACE of 3 tranches, so 63 tranches. So the maximum excess supply would be 63 tranches minus the 7 that are needed. So the maximum excess supply is not 59, it's 56. So the 0.036 oversupply ratio is calculated on the basis of the 2 tranches of excess supplies that are on ACE divided by the maximum possible excess supply, which is 56, and that's 0.036. So the prices for PSCNG, JSPN, and ACE will all decline from round 1 to round 2, and the greatest reduction is for PSCNG that has the greatest excess supply and the greatest oversupply ratio, followed by JSPNL, that also the price reduces, but the reduction is somewhat less, and finally with ACE, where the price reduces again, but again, somewhat less, and that's calculated on the basis of the oversupply ratio. There are changes proposed to the RSCP decrement this year to harmonize the approach with the BGS CIEP auction and to simplify the decrement functions, from and have it more as a step function rather than a linear function as had been the case before. So what we see here then will continue for round 2. Bidders are changing their bids and they're shifting their bids. So you see that PSCNG goes from having 78 tranches bid to having just 60. So bidders are switching their bids away from PSCNG into other EDCs, JSPNL, and RICO. So at the end of round 2, the number of tranches bid is than the number of tranches that are needed for all of the EDCs. All of the EDCs have strictly positive excess supply, and as a consequence, all prices will decline from round 2 to round 3. This process will continue, so bidders will again submit their bids, meaning stating the number of tranches that they're willing to bid at the prices that are announced from one round to the next, until we get to a point where the number of tranches bid and the number of tranches that are needed are 0. And at that point, the auction closes. So I'll talk in general terms about specific auction features. The first feature is that offers are binding. So if the price on a product is not reduced from one round to the next, then bidders cannot reduce the number of tranches they bid on that product. So it means they cannot withdraw, so reduce the number of tranches they bid in total, and for that reduction to come from the product or the EDC for which the price is not reduced, and they cannot switch away from the EDC for which the price is not reduced. In other words, if the bidder is making an offer at a given price and that price does not change, then the offer has to be maintained, so the offer is binding. The total number of tranches bid by a bidder cannot increase, so that's in total across all the EDCs. So bidders can switch from one EDC to another, so decrease in the number bid in one EDC and decrease in one and increase in another. But if you think about the number of tranches bid in total across all EDCs, that number cannot increase. So bidders can either maintain the total number of tranches that they bid, or they can reduce their total number of tranches bid, but then that cannot increase it. The auction will close on all products at once, so winners are determined for all products or all EDCs at one within each auction. So we've talked about that already when we looked at the example, the fact that the number of tranches that are bid and that are needed on RICO are the same. It doesn't mean that bidding stops on RICO. Bidding continues because bidders always have an ability to switch their bids to RICO from another EDC. So the auction will close on all products at once. Similarly, there's a uniform price, meaning that for a given EDC, all winners on that EDC are given the same price, namely the auction clearing price. So this is a schematic of a round. So I alluded a little bit to the bidding phase of a round. So a round has three phases, the bidding phase during which bidders can submit bids, the calculating phase, which is when the bidding closes. At that point, bidders can no longer bid, and bidders do not yet have access to the results from the round. It's the portion of the round where there are calculations made on the basis of the bids that are submitted. And then finally, there's a reporting phase where bidders are provided with information regarding the round that the bidding phase that just closed. So during the bidding phase, then bids are submitted, and bids are numbers of tranches for each EDC that suppliers are willing to serve at the going prices for the round. When bidding ends, the calculating phase occurs, and when it closes, then information is released to bidders. So there's two main category, maybe three main category of information that's released to bidders. One are the prices for the next round, so bidders can prepare their bids. The second is a measure of excess supply, and that measure is a range of excess supply. So let's say the excess supply in the auction is 52 tranches, then the range that can be provided to bidder will be something like 51 to 55 tranches. So it's going to be a range in which the true value of excess supply lies. It's a range. Those ranges are published in the auction rules, and the upper bound of the range is always an integer divisible by 5. The other category of information that's not on the slide here, but it's also that bidders get feedback on the bid that they submitted. So there's information that's specific to a bidder that bidder has access to that will provide the results of their bid. So in round one, the round one bid then is just a number of tranches for each EDC, and in round one, there's the possibility of a volume reduction. So the volume, meaning the total tranches in the auction, could be reduced if it's necessary to do so to ensure a competitive bidding environment. Whether an adjustment is necessary is decided on the basis of interest in the first round of bidding, according to guidelines that are approved by the board. And if the volume has to be reduced, it is reduced to the number of tranches bid in round one, divided by a parameter that's called the target eligibility ratio. So for example, if the number of tranches bid is 75 tranches and the target eligibility ratio is 1.5, then the volume would be reduced to 75 divided by 1.5, or 50 tranches. And that would mean that there would be at that point 1.5 tranches bid for each tranche procured. So 75 divided by 50, or 1.5 tranches bid for each tranche procured, ensuring that there are sufficient tranches bid for each tranche to be procured through the auction. So we said in round one, a bid is just a number of tranches for each EDC at the prices that are announced for the round. For subsequent round, we know prices will get reduced from one round to the next. And in response to those reduced prices, bidders can leave their bids unchanged. They can, if the price for an EDC has ticked down, reduce the number of tranches they wish to bid for that EDC by either withdrawing tranches from the auction, so ceasing to bid those tranches from that point on in the auction, until the end, or bidding those tranches on one or several of the other EDCs, which is switching, and bidders can do a combination of those two as well. So two things to note here. We said if the price for an EDC has ticked down, we can reduce the number of tranches. So remember that offers are binding. So if the price for an EDC does not tick down, then the bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches it bids on that EDC. And also a reminder that, as we noted, as one of the primary features of the auction process, bidders cannot increase the total number of tranches that they bid. So they can increase the number of tranches that they bid on a particular EDC through switching, but they cannot increase the total number of tranches across all EDCs for which they bid. We mentioned that in the reporting phase, bidders have access to information. So this is just kind of a sample report for a round. It includes a range for the total excess supply in the auction. So total excess supply meaning the excess supply across all EDCs. Here it's 76 to 80 tranches, meaning that the true total excess supply figure lies somewhere in that interval. This is a CIEP report, and it provides prices for the next round, so for the round 6, given to report for round 5. So the prices for the next round in dollars per megawatt day. In addition to that information is available in the same manner for all bidders, but also each bidder gets an individual report about that bidder's own bid. That's only for that bidder's own bid, so bidder has no information about any other bidder's bids or eligibilities. The process of reduction in price for each of the EDCs will continue until the auction closes. The auction will close on all EDCs at once, once total excess supply is zero and bidding has stopped on all the EDCs. For a given EDC, all the winners are given the same price, the same final price. So that's the uniform pricing feature of the auction that we mentioned earlier. After the auction is over, the auction manager submits a report to the board, and the consultant for staff or board advisor also provides a checklist to the board, and the board can then consider those reports and the results to render a decision on the auction results within 2 days of the close of the last auction. Now, the board has the option of rendering a decision on the results of each auction at different times as well. If the board accepts the results of the auction, then the supplier master agreements are executed between the winning BGS bidders and the EDCs within 3 business days of the board decision. If any security is required, given the credit worthiness standard of the SMA, then that security must be posted upon execution of the agreement. Pre-auction security that will have been provided with the Part 2 application expires at that point, and certificates of expiration and letters of credit are returned, and the letter of credits are canceled. And finally, the supply period begins June 1, 2019. The overview of bidding in the auction and a quick view of the calendar of the auction. I'll talk next about the application process. As I mentioned in the introduction, there are 2 parts to the application process, the Part 1 and the Part 2 application. The application process itself is almost completely online. That means that you will be providing the required information through an online form, that any supporting documents that you are required to provide can be uploaded to the form, including separate forms that are called inserts, that are Word form that you can fill in and sign if required to do so, scan and then upload back into the online form. The only thing that's not, that cannot be provided online are the credit instruments that are required with the Part 2 application. Those have to be provided in hard copy at the auction manager's office. So there will be a second website for the application process. There's the bgs-auction.com for all documents and information related to the auction posted by the BGS auction manager. But there's also a second website for the application process, which is bgs-application.com. So I'll give a little bit of an overview both of the form and the process and the requirement. So if you're new to the process, the first step is to request an account. So request an account, meaning login credentials so that you can access the bgs-application.com and submit your materials for the Part 1 application. If that's you, then you can go to the bgs-application.com website and fill in the information that's required under the Get an Account tab. Alternatively, you can send to us by email at bgs-auction@nira.com your username, password, not your username, password, your contact information, name, company, and email, as well as the contact information from one representative, and then we will provide to you your credential, the username and password, as well as instructions and information on various deadlines. Now, those credentials are not provided to you on a rolling basis, so if you submit your information to get an account, we will send you an acknowledgement, but we will provide credentials to new bidders that have submitted their information through the Get Account tab, as well as credentials for returning bidders shortly before the online application portal becomes available. That's planned for December 4th. It could be earlier than that, but that's roughly the time frame after the board has rendered the decision on the auction process. So there are two parts to the application. As we mentioned, the Part 1 application being due on December 18th by noon. The requirements are simple, and the requirements are basically unchanged from prior years. So you will be providing contact information, including contact information for a main point of contact, the authorized representative, who will be responsible for providing any confidential information to other members of your team, as well as nominees. And we refer to in our document the authorized representative plus the nominees as the bidder team, and they represent the applicant in the auction. Practically speaking, the auction manager will send all correspondence electronically to the bidder team. So whoever you want to be copied on there, you have an opportunity to up to three additional individuals over and above your authorized representative. You'll also be asked for contact information for your legal representative in New Jersey, which is an individual or company that agrees to accept service of process on the applicant's behalf, as well as a credit representative, which is an in-house representative that can answer any credit-related questions. There are no state licensing requirements required here. The BGS supplier has to be a load-serving entity in PJM by the start of the supply period, so June 1, 2019. So if an applicant is not yet a load-serving entity and is not a current BGS supplier, then the applicant will be required to certify that it has looked at the requirements and that it has no impediment to becoming a load-serving entity in PJM by the start of the supply period. To give you a little bit of a view of what that online form can look like, this gives you a bit of a sense of the architecture of the form. So there are fields in which you can provide information, such as the name of the applicant. You'll be asked various questions throughout the form, and on the basis of the questions that you will answer by filling in the radio buttons, then other fields may open up. So basically, the fields that you're going to see are the fields that you are required to complete given your particular situation. You will also have upload buttons to upload supporting documents such as your financial statements. At the bottom of the form, you can save, you can print, and you can finally submit the form. There's also a right-hand toolbar that has useful documents, also has a save and a logout button, but we typically provide a glossary for the application process, a document that summarizes how applications are reviewed, and finally, the application and login instructions that are also sent to you with your credentials. So as I mentioned, the requirements themselves have not changed. So there's contact information, as we mentioned, the PGM requirements, as I mentioned, and there's also financial information to be provided with the Part 1 application. That application will serve to establish a creditworthiness assessment that will be provided to you with your notification for the Part 1 application. That includes annual and quarterly financial information for you and also for a guarantor if you're presenting the, if you're relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, credit ratings from the major agencies, and there's also additional information that's required for any entity that's not incorporated or otherwise formed under the laws of a state of the United States. So either if the bidder is a foreign entity or the guarantor is a foreign entity. There are certifications that are required with the Part 1 application, including agreeing to the terms of the supplier master agreement, as will be approved by the board, the auction rules, as will be approved by the board, as well as agreeing to the confidentiality of certain types of information, including the list of qualified bidders, and agreeing that any rights that an entity acquires as a fact of being a qualified bidder cannot be assigned to another entity. Once the Part 1 application has been closed, applications have been evaluated, and bidders have been notified of their qualification status, then the Part 2 form will become available. So that will be a different tab on the bgs-application.com website, and the architecture of the form is generally the same. So there's going to be uploads for inserts, there are going to be fields to fill in information, as well as radio buttons to respond to certain questions that will lead to other fields being opened up for the bidder's particular situation, a toolbar, a floating toolbar with useful documents, including the process for review and the glossary, and the same basic functionality that allow you to print the application, to save, and then submit will also be provided for the Part 2 form. Illustrative form to give you sample requirements will be posted to the BGS auction website. To be registered as a bidder, so in other words, the requirements for the Part 2 application will be to make certifications, including certifications regarding associations and the handling of confidential information, providing an indicative offer. So we've talked a little bit about that already. So that's going to be the number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid at the maximum starting price, but it also includes a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the minimum starting price. So for each of those two price levels, that will be announced on November 14th. Bidders then provide financial guarantees that are proportional to the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. So the indicative offer at the minimum starting price is really for informational purposes. For the maximum starting price, it does determine a couple of things, the amount of the financial guarantees, as well as the total number of tranches that an entity can bid in round one. For the BGS CIEP auction, the financial guarantee is simply a letter of credit of $375,000 per tranche. so per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. For the BGS RSTP side, there's also the letter of credit, and a reminder that there is a comment now ongoing for those letters of credit of $500,000 per tranche. So the difference in amounts being reflective of the fact that the BGS RSTP tranche is approximately 100 megawatts on an eligible basis, while the CIEP is three-quarters of that at 75 megawatts on an eligible basis. For the BGS RSTP auction, depending on the credit worthiness assessment of the Part 1 application, then some qualified bidder may be required to provide additional security in the form of a letter of intent to provide a guarantee if a bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, or a letter of reference if the bidder or its guarantor does not have sufficient unsecured credit, given the independent credit requirement of $2.4 million per tranche. The illustrative application form that I've been talking about, the comment processes we've mentioned that are going to be posted on the contract and credit page of the bidder info tab of the BGS auction website. The BGS auction website is your main source of information for BGS documents, including the filing of the EDCs that are on the regulatory page. So that website, so again, there are two websites, the BGS-application. You can go there to request an account for the application website, and the BGS-auction.com is really the informational website where you can find the documents. It includes the search capability and a site map. The announcement that we send by email, and you can register to receive those announcements, are also posted on the BGS Auction website, and it will typically include alerts for upcoming deadlines and events. There's a frequently asked question portion of the website, so any question that comes in to the auction manager, there's a response that goes to the bidder individually, and then the question and answer are posted the BGS auction website. The same will go with the questions that are answered during this webcast, or any questions that we don't have time to get to during this webcast will become an FAQ that will be posted on the BGS auction website. The auction documents are also provided often in more than one of the pages of the BGS auction website, including the auction rules, the supplier master agreement, and these bidder information materials and presentation will also be posted to the BGS auction website. So that will be the presentation, the audio for the presentation portion of this presentation will be posted to the BGS auction website, and there's going to be bidder materials also that will be posted and provide additional overviews of the application process, the rate paid by customers, the proposal from the EDCs through their July filing, et cetera. So that those bidder materials are no longer provided in hard copy, but rather are in soft copy and posted to the website. If you do have a question from the auction manager, maybe you will not have time to ask your question today, or the question occurs to you after the webcast is over, you can submit it to the auction manager. There's a web form through the BGS auction website, or you can simply send it to us by email at bgs-auction@nira.com. Now, typically there's a two-day turnaround, but it can take longer as the auction manager may need the expertise from EDC representatives for data questions, for example, or for legal questions related to supplier master agreement. All the answers, though, are routed back to the auction manager. That is, the response will come to you from the auction manager, and then the question and answers are posted to the BGS auction website. We also mentioned that there's a data room, a BGS data room on the BGS auction website. and that data room is separated into two pages, so the data room has its own tab. There's a home with a description, and then there are two tabs, monthly data, which are data series that are updated monthly on or before the 17th of the month. And then there's an additional data tab with data series that are updated less frequently. There are data description documents for each of those two pages that provide more information on the data series that are provided. In the monthly data room, you have data series that are provided at an aggregate level for CIEP and also for BGS RSCP. The data are provided separately for each of the EDCs, and they include eligible hourly load, eligible peak load allocations, hourly load, peak load allocations, as well as switching statistics. The data methodology are generally consistent across the EDCs, but as has been provided as information through FAQs and in response to bidder questions, just point out that there are two instances where there are differences in methodology. One is that JCP&L provides excess generation data, so that's to take into consideration of customers that have on-site generation. So they provide excess generation data for hourly load files, for retail load, BGS, and for CIEP. To get data that's consistent with the data that JCP&L reports to PJM, then the load data from the BGS data room has to be summed with the excess generation. So in other words, that excess generation must be netted out to get the load data as would be reported to PJM. For the capacity and transmission peak load allocation, PSE&G, ACE, and RECO have consistently provided unscaled capacity peak load allocation data, but have also provided the applicable daily zonal scaling factors. And PSE&G, ACE, and RECO have also consistently provided transmission peak load allocation data that is already scaled. For JCP&L, there are kind of two regimes here. Prior to June 1, 2017, the capacity and transmission peak load allocation data is already scaled. So both capacity and transmission are already scaled. Starting June 1, 2017, capacity and transmission are both unscaled, and the applicable daily zonal scaling factors are provided for both. The additional data room, there's been a bit of a cleanup here to take out some rows that are no longer relevant and that you may have seen in prior instances of the data room. Generally, it provides switching statistics, hourly data by customer grouping, and additional data by customer grouping, as well as retail rates. The additional data room has been updated as of the September data update, and you will also note that additional data that's older, so prior to June 2015, is now archived at the bottom of the page. So we mentioned that the EDCs will be making available rates for transmission-related charges paid to BGS suppliers. EDCs also make available data on municipal aggregation in the form of a list of municipalities that have completed enrollment in a municipal aggregation program. So those files have been updated with the September data update, and we would expect the EDCs to be able to provide an additional update that would occur prior to the auction, so with the January data update. The BGS RSCP pricing spreadsheet tool, we've talked about it already, which is a tool made available and intended for bidders to translate their assumptions about auction prices into the applicable BGS RSCP retail rate for each EDC so that they can assess migration and the possibility of switching and take that information into account in their bids. That being said, the BGS auction website does not purport to have all information that could be relevant to potential bidders in the auction, and there's certainly other sources of information and other investigations that potential bidders may make, including through the PJM website that has various important sources of information, including information on the reliability pricing model through PJM OASIS and PJM EIS GAP. That concludes the presentation portion of the presentation, webcast.